And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, we're speaking after Trump announced the American bombing of Iran, and before the speech that he is supposed to be giving on television late Saturday night. And I must say that it strikes me that his entire agenda, everything he promised in the campaign, has now failed. His two big things were he was going to bail out the economy. Hasn't happened. He put on these tariffs. He was going to make 90 deals in 90 days. He hasn't made one. And
the tariffs were going to pay for everything for the tax cuts.
That's right, exactly. And his tax cut bill is tied up in Republican wrangling between some Republicans who want to cut more and other Republicans who feel, no, austerity is enough. But there's a group that feels that there should be more austerity. Of course, it's not austerity for their group. It's austerity for people who go to work for a living. But worst of all, of course, he said no more wars. He's going to keep the United States out of war. Biden was a warmonger. Obama was a warmonger. But he just bombed Iran. It's a staggering loss of everything. He lost across the board in what, 5 months?
Yeah. Who was it that put together that parody of the song "Bomb, Bomb, 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 Bomb Iran"? One of these people. Of course, that was the policy over the last 20 some years of Bibi Netanyahu trying to get the United States to do this.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And there was the squabble this week over the U.S. intelligence between that and the intelligence that the Mossad was feeding as to how far along the Iranians were in their development of the bomb.
It wasn't just the U.S. intelligence. It was French intelligence, British intelligence, the United Nations.
Yeah.
Everybody who studied it said the Iranians had not made the decision to develop a bomb. And if they did make that decision, they would have several. It was beyond enrichment. There were many other problems that they hadn't yet tackled. So there was no imminent danger. Everybody said that. But as Trump says, I don't believe him.
Well, he certainly said he didn't believe his national security advisor.
Right, Tulsi Gabbard.
Tulsi Gabbard. Although Tulsi's credibility on matters, was quite lacking.
Why don't they just close the CIA and all the 16 intelligence agencies like they closed USAID, since he doesn't really care about it?
Well,
that would save a lot of money.
Somebody, this, I think it was Bill Maher this week, played a clip of Trump being interviewed as to who he was relying on for his information. And he said, me, I'm very intelligent.
Are you kidding me? He said that?
He said that a while ago. That was from an old interview. I don't know, his first term of presidency or when it was going. Yeah. But remember, he knows more than the generals. He said that too.
He may know more than the generals. That's fantastic. But therefore, get rid of all these agencies that are wasting all of our money and causing people to do work that's useless because the conclusion is unnecessary.
Well, they are, either getting rid of agencies or making them useless. We've talked about that over the last several shows, with the National Institute of Health, the CDC, all of these things. The problem is they get rid of some of these, or they get rid of people, and they realize they have to call them back because there are really key things that they need.
I think now, the people who are doing the calling back are saboteurs. If Trump really knew what was going on, he'd make sure they didn't get called back, because they don't have to be called back. It's just softies that are calling them back. In the final analysis, what's the difference? People die anyway. Everybody's going to die.
Oh, that's the journey, the Joni Ernst theory.
That's exactly right. Yes, everybody's going to die. And who could deny that?
That's true.
Yeah.
You know, when Trump speaks, I'm sure he's going to blame Obama and Biden for all of, for making him do this. Their failures, their weakness, you know. This whole thing is about a display of strength. It's about optics. It's about showy type of things. So, and that'll be his continual theme. The sad part is that, or maybe it's not sad, but it's ominous or dangerous, is that the MAGA crowd, it doesn't move them from their support of Trump.
Well, wait a minute. Do you think so? Do you think that the Green is and Bannon are going to stick with Trump in the face of this bombing?
But they're not the masses.
No, they're not the masses. But I'm just curious. Do you think that the leadership group of the Trump movement will split? Do you think Tucker Carlson will stick?
No, but they're not going to matter. They're not going to matter.
They're not going to matter.
They only matter to the extent that they have ammunition to run shows online, you know, be online, get clicks, and make money from it. That's all they really care about. But the crowd itself, is split on this, whether the United States. But I'm sure by the beginning of the week, polling is going to be out whether they back the president. You're going to see favorability on this action versus an unfavorability on this. And you'll see also a partisan split on this.
But let's face it, even if MAGA supports it, even if the MAGA people support it, they're a minority. Add them all up. They may have power, but add them all up. 70% of the people are against it. They're only 30% of the people.
Yeah, but they're the group that is activated, and they're the group that holds together and votes as a block, basically. Whereas we know the Democrats are right now very divided and scattered and what have you.
Forget the Democrats. How about people who look at this and say, my God, this could be atomic war, which it could be.
Well, who's...
I mean, everybody's hoping, really, that the Iranians have no power, therefore can't retaliate. But what if they do?
Well, they can't. That's the thing. I mean, that was holding people back. But who they retaliate against and where is something else. If you remember when he gave the order to kill Soleimani, the general, they retaliated by hitting a U.S. base in Iraq. Of course, Trump said nobody was hurt, but there were hundreds of people suffered brain damage on that.
Yeah.
But they've been weakened. The Iranians have been very, very weakened. And this is why it didn't happen before, by the Israelis primarily destroying the leadership and capabilities of Hezbollah in Lebanon, because Hezbollah had over 100,000 missiles that they could launch against Israel, and now that threat is all gone. They've lost any capabilities that they really had in Syria, where they were trying to build things. Hamas is living under, what's left of them are living underground, and there's no leadership there. So the Iranians were pretty much left on their own. And you'll note that the Russians aren't going to come to their defense because the Russians wanted the Iranian drone manufacturing. That's what the Iranians were selling to the Russians. But that's gone by the wayside. I don't know where the Chinese are in all of this, whether they think that they now can take advantage and try to go against Taiwan, or whether they're trying to figure out what the heck we can do, or do we have a guy in the White House that's, you know, going to hit back, which is the image that Trump wants to project.
Well, I think that the problem, the American problem is that Trump's policies have failed. Everything he said he was going to do, he couldn't do and didn't do.
You know,
Netanyahu's problem is that his strategy succeeded. Now what does he do? The whole point of the strategy was to be able to solve his problems in the Arab world by making a deal directly with Saudi Arabia and being able to ignore the Palestinians. Now he can't make a deal with Saudi Arabia because they won't do it. And the Palestinians haven't gone away. He hasn't killed them all. They're still there.
Now I don't know about I don't know about the Saudis, because the Saudis were very, very wary of Iran. And if
until they did, until 3 months ago, they had a rapprochement.
Well, they did, but you know, in the Arab and the Islamic world, because the Iranians are not Arabs, they're Persians. Right. These alliance, these temporary alliances, can shift very quickly.
Well, as Trump shows you, in every world, the alliances can shift very quickly.
And if I may say, one of the other Trump cards the Iranians had was, we're going to hit the oil facilities in Saudi Arabia
That's right. That's not going to happen now.
Well, yeah, they don't have the capability of doing
that. Even if they had the capability, they're not going to do it. Because if they did it, that would mean that the Israeli embrace would be possible. If they don't do it, there's no chance that the Israeli embrace becomes possible. Now what does Netanyahu do?
Well, we're going to find out. We're going to find out.
Well, but the real problem is there might be a wider war somehow or other. It might not be this week. It might not even be this year. But we still celebrate Purim, and that happened 2,000 years ago.
More than 2,000 years ago.
Yeah.
But, we're just going to have to see which way it plays out. And we have to see which way the Iranian people go. You know, the Iranian people, by and large, were more out of all the countries in the Islamic Middle East. They were the ones that were most favorable to the Americans, basically because they were living under this horrendous extremist Islamic mullah government that suppressed them, and they knew what they had before and they know what they have now. The other countries, the Palestinians, they don't like the United States because they see them as being supporting Israel. But the Iranians don't have that problem, the man and the woman on the street.
Do you think that this bombing is going to make the Iranian man in the street friendly to America? They would be the only people in the world who don't rally around the flag when their country is invaded.
That's the big question. That was one of the things that we had to calculate in terms of when your country is attacked, people rally around the leadership, but I'm not sure whether that's going to happen in Iran. They may rally to get rid of the leadership and say, we don't want to be bombed anymore. It's because you guys wouldn't make a deal. We've had enough. We'll see what happens.
Remember the history of the Islamic Republic. When the Shah was overthrown, it was by a left secular movement that overthrew the Shah. The French and the CIA, the French intelligence and the CIA, helped Khomeini leave France, organize within Persia to overthrow what they regarded as an unacceptably leftist government. And they took power. It took a year, year and a quarter, year and a half, and they took power. And they've ruled ever since. But if this government is overthrown, they're not going back to the Shah, although I see that some American senators have proposed that a monarchy is exactly what Iran needs. But that's not where they're going. You need a secular leadership.
A constitutional monarchy where the monarch is the figurehead of the government.
How about if you have a republic without any kind of monarchy? Monarchy hasn't served the Persians and the Iranians too well.
No. Don't forget, Britain has a constitutional, well, they don't have a constitution, but they have a democratic and a monarchy. But I don't know. I know that
they have a different Shah's political son, evolution.
Yeah, I know the Shah's son is trying to rattle things and wants to return to, what was that? It's not the chrysanthemum throne. It was the other, whatever.
Peacock throne.
But,
Look, the descendants of the kings of France are still kicking around. So what? King Zog of Albania's descendants are kicking around. So what? Yeah.
Well, Spain went back to having a king.
But it's not a king. Wait, all right, yes.
All right.
But that's hardly a step forward toward democracy.
Yeah. You're
not going to propose a king for the south of the United States, are you?
Well, we just had, last week we had that no kings rally.
Exactly. No kings.
No kings.
No kings. Meanwhile, the American government is going to promote kings in Iran as a progressive step forward. But I don't think anybody imagined that Trump would actually intervene in the Middle East in a war. I can't imagine that the people who voted for him thought that was possible when that was such a strong attack he made against Obama and against Biden.
Yeah, well, but they've tolerated other things that he's disappointed them on. And it's just that mentality. It's the tribalism mentality. And it's whatever he does, it's better than having the other guys in charge. It doesn't matter what his policies are. We're stopping the other guys from being in charge. And that kind of leads into something else I wanted to talk about this week, because I heard a remarkable program on Friday with, the woman that I'm always promoting, Ruth Ben-Ghiat, who's an expert on fascism and authoritarianism, wrote the book Strong Men. And she had on her show a professor from Vanderbilt by the name of Jonathan Metzl, M-E-T-Z-L, who's got a degree, a PhD in psychology, and he's also a degree in sociology. And he, for years we've talked about the book, What's the Matter with Kansas? And why people continue to vote against their self-interest. And he gave the most cogent explanation that I've heard yet as to why that happens. And he's used Tennessee more or less as a study, because in Tennessee, the Republicans are in complete control and they keep cutting back benefits for the people in order to cut taxes for the wealthy. Now, this is nothing new with Republicans, but one would think then the people would be up in arms about this. And it turns out just the opposite is happening. That as you, in his way of analysis, and after studying people and talking to people, ordinary citizens, he says, as you cut resources, people become more tribal and they fight among themselves for the remaining resources rather than try to get more resources provided for themselves. It's a psychological phenomenon that they undergo. And it essentially fits in with Ruth Ben-Ghiat's talking about people are in survival mode, that it's not me versus you, which is the normal political way we have things. Democrats versus Republicans. And one side wins an election, they get to try to enact their policies, and then the next time, because of the institutions, the other side might win. So there's always that possibility. This is, Professor Metzl agrees, is me or you, where people are set against each other in a survival mode. It's a zero-sum game. And it also fits into Ruth Ben-Ghiat's theories as to why the autocrats are trying to destroy institutions. Because if they're institutions, you're back into a me versus you. Who gets to use the institution? Who gets to control the institution? If there are no institutions, there's nothing to nothing to set up that dynamic. Now, the other thing, and you can actually get this online at her Substack place, Lucid, under her videos. The other thing that the Professor Metzl talked about was that what we don't understand is that the other side has a different set of priorities than we do. And even it, like our side wants better health care, but they keep cutting back on health care. And when he talks to people, they don't really care that their health care is being cut back, or they don't care as much because their agendas are Second Amendment and anti-abortion. And they feel that even if they lose, they've lost in a valid or in a better cause than fighting for healthcare. I know it's kind of crazy, whatever. The other thing, the psychological factor that Metzl talks about, is the success of the Republicans. And this is an old story. This is an old story. Lyndon Johnson talked about it for years, about even the poorest white guy feels better, you know, than he can always look down on the black man. And we're talking here in a week where Juneteenth just occurred. But it's this phenomenon where the Republicans get people to look downward as the source of their problems rather than upwards towards the billionaires. It's the immigrants, it's the poor people, it's the takers, the who rely on government handouts that are the ones that are the problem, not the billionaires who won't pay their taxes, the millionaires who won't pay their taxes. How long, you know, whether you can change this, you know, it's not something that's going to change overnight because they've spent years investing in creating this phenomenon and this dynamic.
And while they spent years doing it, nobody has spent years in not doing it or doing some alternative thing.
Well, you know, FDR broke the mold when he talked about the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And he offered alternatives. He had whole programs that he was able to enact and that had immediate effects on people. He had people put to work on the CCC within months of taking office. He stopped the run on the banks immediately with the bank holiday. He had, you know, a whole bunch of things. And gradually, Lyndon Johnson did the same thing, so to speak. But there is nobody that's been articulating the other side and fighting for it in these terms. The messaging has been far too targeted at the people that we know and hang around rather than the people who we want to help.
There's another important thing. Roosevelt didn't do this by himself. In fact, Roosevelt didn't even do it. There was a huge mass movement.
I know what you're going to say. He said to the unions, make me.
He said to Sidney Hillman, you've convinced me. Now go out and make me do it.
Yeah.
That's right. That's the point. There was a very large left-led mass movement that demanded everything. And they got some things. But the more important thing, and the most important thing they got, was a certain spirit within the country, so that the spirit that the Republicans have spent the last 50 years cultivating couldn't take hold.
Problem now is you don't have unions that are
You don't have any mass movement. You don't have any widespread mass movement. Now, it's true. We had 5 million people on the streets last week, you know, opposing Trump. And that's good. There's nothing wrong with that. That's wonderful, but that's not a movement.
Well, Ruth Ben-Gad said, though, there is something there. She said, remember there was a previous, we had a previous day for people to get together about a month or so ago.
Yeah.
That day drew a lot of people, but this one last week, No Kings, drew more.
Right.
And she says, when you get more people, you've got momentum. And that scares the hell out of the people who are trying to suppress it.
But in the meanwhile, you've got plenty of Democratic Party leaders who are trying to suppress it, who say, oh, it's too it's going to scare away the people in the middle that we have to support, appeal to. Nonsense. Crap. All it's going to, if you're going to oppose it, all you're going to do is demoralize the people on the left, without whom you can't do anything, including you can't appeal to the people in the middle because you got nobody to appeal to them.
Well, last week, the people I saw were mostly in the middle. There were certainly people.
That's right. But that's right. But let's face it, there were 100,000 people in Philadelphia, right? That's what everybody said. The picture showed that. 100,000 people in Philadelphia. Most of those people, I'm sure, are in the center. But the question is, where was the organizing spark that brought out those 100,000? That's the question. That's the important thing. Without that organizing spark, you don't get the people in the middle. It's at least no one in the world has ever figured out how to do that.
Well, you know,
even Jesus needed 12 organizers.
the Republicans have even corrupted the messages of Jesus.
Oh, of course, they'll corrupt whatever they touch. They corrupt. They befoul everything in human experience. They're a dreadful group. They reject all that make us human in favor of all that make us brutes. That's what they're for. And now they threaten us with the possibility of an unbelievable war.
Well, they're also threatening us in terms of health. I mean, we talked last week about vaccines and what they're doing to undermine people getting vaccines or even having vaccines available. This week, we've learned that the Trump administration wants the EPA to withdraw its ban on asbestos, which is one of the largest killers of people in the last century.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
If you told that to somebody, they'd say, what are you slandering these people for?
They're also, they're against anything that reduces fossil fuel use or doesn't increase fossil fuel use.
Right.
The post office under Biden signed contracts to buy a whole new fleet of electric vehicles.
But bought them already, paid for them.
Yeah. Now they're going to be sold off. Or at least they're going to try to sell them off.
But they're not going to use them, that's for sure.
That's good. Yeah, go back to the gas guzzlers type of thing.
They've announced that the Social Security fund is going to run out in 2034, and they'll cut Social Security benefits by 23%. They could solve that problem overnight.
Yeah.
There's no issue there. Just increase the payment.
Take the cap off.
Take the cap off. Exactly.
They keep saying, no, we got to cut back. You can't retire. People live longer. I heard that argument this week from a congressman on radio. People live longer. So 67 shouldn't be the age now where you start getting Social Security benefits. Well, that's nice. Except if you've worked hard with your hands and, been exposed to all sorts of physical types of infirmities and whatever,
where is it written that you have to work all your life? Why do you have to do that? What's good about that? How is your character at the age of 75, if you have retired, how is your character going to improve by your going to work?
Well, their theory, suffering improves your character.
Improves your character. My suffering improves your character. Doesn't improve my character.
Looks like we're suffering by lack of time now.
Yes, we're out of time. Well, if we're still here next week, we'll review what happened as a result.
Well, yeah, maybe some of our queries will be answered.
Maybe. Hopefully we'll see each other next week.
Yep, and summer is here.
Yep.
All right.
See you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.